This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Good morning, everybody, and happy Friday. Hope you're bracing for the storms. There's going to be storms, Jeff. Are you aware of this?
I've heard.
Yeah, there's going to be storms. I'm going to presume we'll all be okay. I want to wish the best to... Was Jacob an intern? Jacob Botter, was he an intern? Was he a... Did he sit in with us for a week? He was...
Yeah, he hung out in the summer. I don't know if he ever had official intern status, but...
And now he's a producer over a local TV producer, mm-hmm. and he's getting hitched this weekend. Now, this is not what you'd want. So Jacob Botter and Jameson Miller are getting hitched tomorrow. My son Ben flew in for it. Did you have nice weather? In the end, I don't personally believe that the weather that you have on your wedding day has any influence or any predictive value in terms of how the actual marriage will turn out.
Mm-hmm.
You can have a stormy wedding and a sunny marriage, and vice versa. Wouldn't you think? How was your weather? How was your wedding?
Well, you got to remember, ours was like during the height of the pandemic. We were like the first.
That's right.
I mean, it was hot. I remember that.
So who came?
It was basically just the wedding party and my family.
Where was it?
And her. It was at the Bolognese Ballroom downtown.
And was it going to be, did you plan it before the pandemic?
I think we are the only people in the history of the wedding industry to get a check back.
You planned it.
So we planned it for like 250 people. And oh, I think we had 47.
Do you feel any pangs about that? Do you wish you'd had the big, the people lost stuff in the pandemic. A lot of people, but that's one. If you had a wedding during the pandemic, other people buried their, people they loved during the pandemic.
Sure.
They couldn't have a funeral. Lots of people, I feel honestly for students who, my kid, the kid who had the worst of it was senior year of high school wiped out
and
then freshman year of college
impacted,
wiped out.
Yeah.
Like that stinks.
I was fine. It was nice to just basically like have the wedding party, and like I felt like everyone hung out and like got close there. I think I would have preferred to have it bigger, but at the end of the day, my wife really, I don't think, did.
Really? Oh,
I think she
normally
always,
would the opposite. You'd normally the wife wants the big wedding.
Correct. No, she. I think she wanted
to speak in wild generalities. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I wish Jameson and Jacob, of course, the best, and hope that the weather holds. It's also Pi Day today.
Mm.
Now, Bruce Ryan, friend of mine and former teacher of yours,
yes.
math teacher of yours, would want me to ask this question. What is pi?
3.14.
Yeah, but what does it mean? What is it? And it's 314, which is why this is Pi Day.
Yeah.
Do you know what it is?
I mean, it's...
I'm a complete math idiot. I literally stopped taking math junior year of high school. I did not take any math my senior year of high school because I felt so defeated by it, demoralized by it, that I'm a complete math. And I had to literally Google pi. Not only did I not know it was 314, I also didn't know what it was. What does it represent?
Yeah, it's also, it's not, I guess, for Mr. Ryan, I should let you know. It's not 3.14. It's actually
it's like an infinite number.
Correct.
3.14159, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You want me to tell you what it is?
Well, I mean, let's see if I can do this by memory. It's the ratio of a circle's circumference to the diameter.
He'd be so proud of you.
Yeah. I was pretty good in geometry.
Yeah. It's a mathematical constant that represents the ratio of a circle's circumference to its diameter. Now, it has been celebrated as Pi Day, this 314. It has been celebrated as Pi Day since 1988 is when it was first celebrated in a lab in California. I would actually think that as long as we're getting rid of everything else right now, we should get rid of ban all references to Pi Day because, like, that's science and it's knowledge and it's stuff like that. And so we can't have any of that. I think probably we got to root out Pi Day while we're rooting out everything else. But people celebrate by eating pie. And so I was going to ask you to rank your favorite pies, but I tried to look up some pie stats. Do you think we eat much in the way of pie? It feels like we ate more pie in the 1950s.
Yeah, it feels like a very diner type thing.
Yeah, I don't like, when did you last have a slice of piece of pie?
Probably my birthday, because I do have an answer to my favorite pie.
It's a chocolate pie.
Nope. Banana cream.
Banana cream pie.
Yep.
When I was reading about pies today, there was a ranking of pies over on Eater or somewhere, and someone said, let's be honest. They had banana cream, was it 5 or 6 or something like that? And they said, basically, let's be honest. We all know this is just a pudding.
I think you could make the argument most pies are
Really, well, I guess they're most, yeah, most pies
it's
are
chocolate
puddings.
Pudding.
Every pie is a pudding and a crust.
Yeah, this is a problem pudding. When you have people like that think they're clever and they get to write.
But they're all puddings. Okay, my pie takes would be as follows.
All right.
Apple pie, wildly overrated and boring. In fact, that is apple pie boring, pecan pie overrated.
Apple pie boring. I can't get with you on the second.
Pecan pie. It's too sweet.
I can't get with you there. Pecan pie is delicious.
No, it's not. It's overrated.
No, I can't get you there.
And apple pie is just boring.
I can celebrate that.
Even
take.
If you were having a fruit pie, why wouldn't you prefer a blueberry pie, a strawberry rhubarb pie? Maybe the rhubarb grosses you out if you're a non-rhubarb person. But a blueberry, a blackberry, any kind of pie over an apple pie, because apple pie is boring. Bite into a blueberry or a raspberry and bite into an apple, and which has the burst of flavor, the blueberry or the raspberry? Apple's dull.
Yeah, you can get some bad blueberries, but
you can get bad blueberries.
In general, I support your take on the first part. Your pecan pie take is terrible.
Do you think it's fair to rank fruit pies against non-fruit pies? Because it would feel like chocolate pies, lemon meringue pies, key lime pies, banana put, like, but those pies would all have a huge advantage over your basic fruit pie. It's like they're in the power four.
Yeah, I think it's fair, like, because in the end, like, it's all pie.
Is pizza pie. Is chicken pot pie pie, and is pizza pie?
No.
Neither?
No. I think it has to be a dessert.
Chicken pot pie is not a pie.
No.
How about the idea that pie is simply something in a crust? It's just in a crust. It's a filling in a crust, and it can be savory or it can be sweet. I very clearly, a standard pizza pie from Memphis Pizza Cafe is not a pie. But I don't know how you can say the deep dish pizza isn't a pie.
It's a casserole more than anything. I think the problem is, we've now established pie as a category of dessert. And so, to me, it's like when you're talking about chicken pot pie.
You've just defined that as a kid. That's the definition you're going
for. You're all welcome.
So
my gift to you.
So chicken pot pie is not pie. No. What is it?
It's an entree.
It's an entree and not pie.
It's like shepherd's pie. Like, I don't, they're...
Okay, I think my favorite pie, your favorite pie is...
Banana cream.
Banana cream. And if you were to go right now in Memphis and buy a slice of banana cream, is there a place you could buy a slice of banana cream pie that would be good?
Whenever I get it here, it's my mom makes it.
It's your mom.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to say my favorite pie now. And by the way, we have had... There's a guy out there who occasionally brings us pies.
Mm-hmm.
And that's nice. And I'm not saying he has to celebrate Pi Day in that fashion, but that's incredibly, that's always been incredibly gracious. But I think my favorite pie is a key lime pie. A delicious key lime pie.
I like key lime pie. The problem is my wife hates it. And so typically when we get dessert,
oh, really?
Like she wants.
You'll split.
Yeah.
Right? You have it. But can I have a bite? Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll get it. We'll have two spoons.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, happy Pi Day, everybody. We got a lot. It's a crazy weekend.
As you can tell, we got a lot to talk about.
Crazy weekend in sports. It is, I mean, it is interesting, though. Tournament week has kind of been ruined. It's great because there's a lot of basketball.
Yeah.
And it's and like the SEC tournament yesterday was
phenomenal. Nuts.
Was just phenomenal. And yet, I think you've made this point before. In the end, for something to be truly phenomenal... Doesn't there have to be stakes?
Yes.
And basically, there's no stakes. You know? There's, and so.
Or it's undefined stakes. It's like, you know what I mean?
It's, and so any of those incredibly close, three incredibly riveting close SEC games yesterday, had they been NCAA tournament games, you would be talking about them for decades, right?
Sure.
But because they were SEC tournament games, yeah, we'll talk about them, but it is a little bit, and now they're going to freaking expand the NCAA tournament further, and the stakes will be diminished further, and so there we go. Before I do, given that it is March Madness, I did think we should start by talking about the sad news yesterday that John Feinstein died at the age of 69, much too young for John Feinstein to die. He, of course, has written more than 40. I can't even get my mind around that. Like, Fishman, my buddy, the author, maybe I should know this exactly. He's written 3 New York Times bestsellers. He's probably written 5 books, probably 5 books. And he's writing 6.
I'll confirm.
Yeah. Feinstein's writing more than 40 ass books, and they are... intensely, while, by the way, being a columnist at the Washington Post.
Mark told me a great story last night.
Okay, what was the story?
So they were, Mark was.
Of course, Mark was at the Washington
Post. When Mark
Post
was at the Post, Feinstein was at the Post as well. Mark was covering the Capitals playoff game.
Uh-huh.
And it was in between the second and third period. And for people that don't know how sports writing works, like that's basically when you're finishing your column and you're like, all right, I'll add the score, whatnot. Like you're done. And he's sitting next to John, and John was going back and forth between writing his column for the game and writing another book.
Oh, God. That's crazy. That is
and
just
Mark
nuts.
Was just like, he's like, how taking,
he
he's like, how
this?
Is he doing
this? Most of us are just dying on deadline.
He's
how,
like, his column was
write?
Better than anything I've written in the book. You know, I've sold millions.
Obviously, the book that you know, changed his life and really changed sports writing was A Season on the Brink. John is an interesting guy. He grew up in, he was born and grew up in New York. His dad was the first executive director of the Kennedy Center. He was on the swim team at Duke. That's the way he ended up at Duke. He ended up on the swim team at Duke, and he that's how he got to know Coach K, was because he was at Duke. And as he said, he hung out with the athletes.
Sure.
You know, like, even though he was on the swim team and Duke basketball wasn't very good back then, but even though, like, you just hung out with the athletes. He sort of...
Athletic dorms. We still had the athletic
comfortable
dorms.
Comfortable in that milieu and whatever else. And he got to know Krzyzewski. And so then he became a cops reporter, actually, and a Metro reporter, which is what Fishman was once upon a time, at the Washington Post. And then he switched over to sports, and he became a Goliath covering sports. It was through Krzyzewski, because he was close to Krzyzewski, that he got to know Bobby Knight, because obviously Bobby Knight and Krzyzewski were connected through their mutual. They both coached at Army.
Well, and he played for him.
And so they knew each other well. So Krzyzewski vouches for Feinstein as Feinstein's pitching this book, whereby he would go and spend every minute of every day, every practice, every game, every everything, every meal with the Indiana basketball team in 85 and 86. He then wrote the book, and it was a sensation. And it truly is, along with there are certain books, sports writing books, books about sports that have that really sort of transformed the state of things. One of them was Ball Four, the book by Jim Boughton in the late 60s, 70s, early 70s, about what life is really like inside baseball. And another was then A Season on the Brink, which showed you Bobby Knight in all his profane, bullying, brilliant, generous, genius, all of that humanity. It was something that people really hadn't seen at that point. And Knight felt deeply betrayed. He called Feinstein the worst whore I've ever seen, among other things. Didn't speak to him for years and years and years, and they never really buried the hatchet. He was also, by the way, furious with Krzyzewski for having vouched for him. And so, what did Feinstein do? He literally planned a book tour the next season around Indiana's road schedule. So they'd play in Ann Arbor. He'd do a book tour at the bookstore in Ann Arbor. They'd play Northwestern. He'd be at the bookstore in Chicago. He would do that. And the more that Knight would bury the book, the more people wanted to read the book. It's not unlike right now. There's a new book out about Meta, which is sort of a tell-all about someone who once worked for Meta. And Meta is trying desperately to squash any publicity of this book or whatever. And so it's just getting more and more popular Zuckerberg. And
number one rule. If you want to get a book to be a massive hit, just get it banned.
So, but that launched his career. He then went on. I think that the next one that I think people might, next best read one, was probably A Good Walk Spoiled, which was his book about a year on the PGA Tour. But he wrote more than 40 of them. He wrote The Last Amateurs, and that's the thing. He would write The Last Amateurs about the Patriot League, a season inside the Patriot League. He wrote a book about season inside the Ivy League. He did write a book about Duke. He wrote a book called about Glavine and there's another pitcher, Paint in the Black or something it was called.
Whatever. Maddox?
It might have been Maddox. But he's best known really for college basketball and for golf. And one of the things that I didn't know John well, I'd see him in press boxes and whatnot. One of the things though that I admired, well, I mean, his work ethic is ridiculous. Ridiculous. Hard not to admire that. But John never let his access shape what he wrote. And basically, it feels like today, not just in sports writing, but in writing generally, everyone lets their access totally shape. I mean, hell, what do we see in the world of NBA breaking news, right?
Yep.
If you give Shams the story, you can shape it the way you want.
I mean, now
it's sort of the first rule. You give someone access and they'll be your PR agent and they'll pander.
Think about this week in free agency. How many times have you read news that contract was negotiated by
yeah,
in the agent?
It's so much pandering. And John just wouldn't do it. If he would fight for access, and his access was incredible. But once he found whatever the story was, then became the story. And it wasn't like, oh God, how am I going to write this about Bobby Knight? I'm going to have to take out these curse words. I can't portray him as a bully. He let me follow him around for a year. You give him access, and the story becomes the story. And that's a hell of a hard thing to do. And it is partly what characterized John Feinstein. The other thing was just how much he loved sports in a way that is kind of insane. Like the day he died yesterday, he had a column up on Tom Izzo. Apparently died of a heart attack at his brother's house, but he had a column up at Tom Izzo. Tom Izzo said, I didn't even know he was calling me, to write a column. I just wanted to talk to John. That's kind of how connected he was. But then also he was calling televised games for Longwood University.
Yes.
John Feinstein, best-selling author of more than 40 books, was calling televised games for Longwood University this past year, where he also taught as a journalism instructor. So just kind of nuts. But a guy who had a massive impact, and I don't know if it's bittersweet or fitting or whatever it is that he passed away as March Madness gets underway. Memphis Tigers play today at noon. How are you feeling about it, Jeffrey?
I actually like that they're playing Wichita State because
the incentive?
Well, you have the opportunity to, quote-unquote, avenge one of your losses. Because I think what we're going to see is, like, what's the motivation? What's the care factor?
I do think that in a sense, it's not the matchup you would want, because they gave you trouble, right?
In two games.
Yes, exactly. So
it wasn't like game one was a rout.
And so they gave you trouble. They've obviously been playing better. Memphis is in that last, in the loss. I mean, Memphis still should have won. They had to just inbound the ball and couldn't. But Memphis' perimeter defense was just horrific in that game. But you're right. Memphis has the incentive that not only did they lose the last time they played Wichita State, it was 1 year ago today that Wichita State knocked them out of the tournament last year and ended a truly dismal season. So we had Penny Friday saying what a difference a year makes. Let's hope a year makes a difference. Now, the stakes are, if you lose today, no one's going to be bitching when you're up in the 8-9, right?
Yep.
And it will invalidate any opportunity you have to bitch if you lose today, right?
I bet we'll still find a way.
Well, people will still find a way to bitch, but in the end, this is early enough in the tournament that they're still. You know, this isn't Sunday. This isn't losing Sunday.
No, and this would be another quad three loss.
It would be another quad three loss, and you are sacrificing your right to bitch if you lose today. And so that seems to... Here's the thing, though. Because we talk about Memphis's incentives, and Memphis very clearly has lots of incentives, revenge and everything else. You know who has incentive?
Wichita State.
Yeah, Wichita State. Wichita State, you're sitting here thinking... I mean, in the end, if you're Wichita State... You go into these tournaments thinking, we got one shot. We can do it, you know? And you see it every year. You see it all over the country. People do this. And so who has more incentive today? As much incentive as Memphis has.
Well, probably Wichita State. And to your point, if you're Wichita State and you know you've got to win this thing to advance, you know, you've got to win the tournament to make it to the NCAA tournament, you kind of catch a break playing Memphis early. Because, like, if you can beat them, if you can beat them now, like,
100%. And strange things do happen. I mean, you're no one's home court. It's a neutral,
atmosphere.
It's It's freaking 12 o'clock. It's at noon. There's no atmosphere. You're gonna have to supply all your own motivation and energy. So, I'm a little worried about it. I'll be honest. I'm a little worried about it. Interestingly enough, Bubba Cunningham, who is, of course, the NCAA Tournament Selection Committee Chair, he did a teleconference on Wednesday. and was asked about the seating question, right? And Memphis came up specifically. First, generally, he said, it's cliche to say it, but I'll go ahead and say it again. It's who did you play, where did you play, how did you do? Well, if that's what it is, who did you play, where did you play, how did you do? That bodes pretty well for Memphis.
Yep.
Right? He goes on. And then ultimately, really good advice that I received from some of the other committee members over the years is when you get down toward the end of these last couple teams, kind of take a step back from the metrics. Say, who was the better team? It doesn't seem like a genius to ask that question, but there you go. But was asked specifically about Gonzaga and Memphis. And this is what he said. Both of those examples demonstrate the metrics that we do use. When I looked at it, this is my opinion, not of the committee, I see that Gonzaga had played and beaten a lot of teams by a lot. So that's going to mean their efficiency is going to be really, really good. But when I look at Memphis, they played a really hard schedule and they won a lot of their games, but not by a strong margin. And even when they played the kind of weaker parts of their schedule, they didn't win by a lot. So their efficiencies weren't that good. So I think that's why you see the divergence of the metrics. As a committee, we're going to have to try to balance that and say, okay, how do we evaluate close wins against good teams or close wins against teams that we think you should be a little bit better than? So hearing those quotes, if you're trying to read between the lines, what does Bubba Cunningham think about Memphis?
Man, because I was listening to it as you read it.
At the beginning, it's like, who did you play? How did you do? Like,
yeah.
That's Memphis's strength there.
But the problem is, like, he kind of said a lot of nothing. He explained why Gonzaga's profile is what it is and why Memphis's profile is what it is. But he didn't tip his hand about how that would be weighed.
Let me ask you this. How much should efficiencies matter in this great big pie, Jeffrey, that we have today? How big a slice should efficiencies be?
I think they should be a tiebreaker.
Just a tiebreaker?
Yes.
And they're clearly more than just a tiebreaker.
Because my biggest problem is any time in sports when you beat up on bad teams and then when you play good teams and you don't win, we immediately dismiss you as a fraud. But somehow in college basketball, it's viewed as a good thing. It bumps you up.
I think they shouldn't. I don't think. Like, at this point of the season, we've got lots of actual games.
Yes.
W's and L's. Maybe, like, halfway through the season, we're trying to figure out how good are they really? You know, we're trying to figure it out. But at this point of the season, we have the W's and we have the L's. That's what should matter. Not the internal numbers of how you did inside those W's and L's, it seems to me.
Why do we play games?
Why do we play games?
Otherwise, like, are we just going to take KenPom and go, let's seed it 1 through 64?
And there's so much. Your ability to blow someone out does not actually determine your ability to win a game. It's a different thing. You know, how focused can you be when you're up by 12 is a different question. Can you extend it to 18 is a different question than how good you are at actually winning games. And I think there's different dynamics that are coming into play there. It was interesting to hear him say all of that. Again, Memphis, Wichita State at noon. That's on ESPN2. Memphis favored by, last I checked, was 9.5. Wichita State, of course, advanced by beating South Florida. Also, we've got Tulsa, Temple, Florida Atlantic, Charlotte, and East Carolina, UTSA. No, I'm sorry. That's not it at all. Florida, FAU, Tulane. What was I saying? If FAU is playing Tulane, that's the other early game. And then Tulsa, North Texas, and UAB, East Carolina. Yeah. Memphis gets the winner if they advance of FAU and Tulane. So that's what's happening there. Meantime, in the SEC, that was fun.
I mean, just an awesome day of basketball. I mean, all the way from the Ole Miss Arkansas game to the close last night of Oklahoma and Kentucky.
It was crazy. I mean, Missouri and Mississippi State, was the one that wasn't close in the
end.
Yeah, but even
it was still a competitive game.
It was a totally competitive game. And then the others, we had, you know, two buzzer beaters and a double OT and a double OT win by Texas over A&M. The Ole Miss-Arkansas game feels like Arkansas has done enough. They're still in, don't you believe? Most people seem to be projecting them in.
Yes,
depending. I mean, whatever happens. Possible Dayton.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of this is going to depend on, you know, how many quote-unquote bid thieves are there. Because if Memphis doesn't win the conference title, there's going to be a bid thief. Because someone that's not in the tournament is going to get into the tournament.
Exactly right.
You know, in the ACC, you could have Carolina. You could have Carolina win it. That would take another bid. And so, like, that would kind of keep pushing them down. So, like, I wouldn't rule out that they could wind up in Dayton.
And obviously North Carolina's chances have been enhanced by Cooper Flagg's injury. We'll get to that in just a moment. How critical are you of Arkansas for the way they defended that last bucket?
I mean, the part of the way they defended the last bucket was they missed the free throw. So Ole Miss gets the rebound. They get the ball to Padula quickly. I mean, it was in transition.
It was in transition. They did let him just pull up and take the shot, though.
I mean, they were trying to get back.
So hits the three.
And the only three he made all day.
Only three. Yeah, it was not the greatest day, but it certainly ended with a flourish, as did the Kentucky-Oklahoma game. That was nuts. Same guy transfers from Oklahoma to Kentucky and beats them twice in a year with buzzer beaters.
Yeah.
I mean, that is painful. So there we got... while Memphis is going to be playing down in Fort Worth, you're going to have, same time, Ole Miss and Auburn.
Yep.
Get another shot at Auburn. Texas, then Tennessee. Missouri, Florida, and Kentucky, Alabama. That's the way those lined up. None of those games are projected to be particularly close. The smallest spread I saw was Kentucky, Alabama at 6.5. Ole Miss, Auburn, 11.5.
I think it's up to 12. I am very curious to see how motivated Auburn is, because last year, and whether or not these things are related, who knows? Auburn won the SEC tournament. They turn around the next week and they get beat in the opening round. They get upset in the first round of the NCAA tournament. Year prior, Bama wins the tournament, number one overall seed, bounced in the Sweet 16. Like, we've seen a lot of teams that have gone deep into the SEC tournament that have not had a ton of SEC or NCAA tournament success. And so I am curious to see if that has any impact. Like, I mean, is Bruce Pearl going to sit there and go, boys, it ain't about this weekend? It's about next weekend and the next weekend and the next weekend?
Well, that's the question with all of this, is what we got back to. It's the stakes.
Yep.
What are the stakes here?
Because there's one thing I do know about Ole Miss. I don't think Ole Miss is all that talented, but I do know they're going to play hard.
Yeah. In the meantime, we got Cooper Flagg goes down with an ankle.
Yeah.
He's in a wheelchair.
God, they're so dramatic.
He's in a wheelchair. He gets up from the wheelchair. Easter is coming, Jeffrey.
He's risen.
And here's the question. He obviously, they've already said, it's not worth it to play this
week. At all.
At all. Very clearly not worth it to play this weekend. It is interesting. If he were a Grizzly, we'd assume he'd be out 3 weeks.
Yeah, well, the timetable's the timetable.
It would be week to week.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think he will play first round?
I think he'll play next week.
He'll play next week?
Yeah.
He's got a week, basically, to heal?
I mean, there is the question of...
from an ankle?
Are they hiding it? But usually, if it's truly a serious injury, it usually gets out. But I think he's going to be limited next week, but I think he's playing.
If you knew that Cooper Flagg was not going to play, and the Grizzlies and the Tigers ended up in the 8-9 game, okay? Let's say the Tigers lose today.
Okay.
God forbid. They lose today. They're an 8-9.
All right.
Would you want them to be in Duke's?
No. Because, I mean, Duke's still very good. Like, Cooper Flagg's clearly the best player in the country. They're still very good
Malik
without
Brown
him.
Also
yeah.
out. Yeah, no, they're still very good without him. But, I mean, we're talking about vis-a-vis the other number ones. Anyway, interesting. That's how quickly things can change. Meantime, while we have all of that, by the way, I don't think I ever set the lineup today. I was so interested in talking about pies. Mm-hmm. We got Jason Smith and then Chris Harrington. Both will be joining us, Jason, in the next segment.
You took offense when John said you sure talks about sports the least.
We have two massive Grizzly games. Tonight, the best team in the league is in town, and Jaren questionable. How about that? Speaking of miracles.
I mean, I was a little surprised. The line's only Cleveland by a point and a half.
So there you go. Jaren questionable. Santi's still out. But Jaren is questionable. So we got that one. And then we got the Tony Allen retirement game, which is a party. Like, those things are, you know, there are times that you just want to be in the building and to celebrate everything that team was, the connections that they had to the city. And let's be honest, Tony himself, and Tony, who has, among other things, made his home here in Memphis.
Yeah.
It's just, so that'll be a party.
Do we know, I know Chris said Mike was planning on being here.
Yes.
And is Mark coming back?
I don't know.
Because I haven't seen anything about Mark one way or the other. Like, to me, part of the celebration is all four of them there.
They're probably going to be there.
I
would think Mark will be here. I would think he would have time, and I would think he would probably have the resources.
I would think he would make time
to get back here. I mean, he does have grit and grind inscribed in his championship ring.
Well, and also he loves talking about those three other guys.
Yeah. So I would think that that they would be there. And so, I mean, take your pick. You got the Memphis playing the best team in the league tonight at FedEx Forum, and then you got a Tony Allen party. Honestly, if I could only pick one, that team meant enough to me and to this city that I'd pick Saturday. But I know a lot of people who are really anxious to go down there tonight. And in the meantime, the Grizzlies got the benefit. Lakers lost again last night.
Yep.
That was fun to see.
You hate.
That was fun to see. Bucks beat the Lakers. Luka was great. Luka was great, but it wasn't actually that competitive. Luka had 45 in that game. And so the Grizzlies are now a full game ahead of the Lakers, and they are tied with the Nuggets. It is kind of, you know, given everything, given the state we thought we were in a week ago, it has certainly stabilized, has it not?
It has, and it also, this is kind of what I've been screaming about, I feel like, for the last few weeks.
You were kind of, the sky is not falling.
The games early in the year count.
They do. They do. All right. We got to get it. We got to take a break. We got Jason Smith coming up next, then Chris Harrington, and then a whole lot more. And we won't really talk about my pastries the rest of the show. We've pretty much done the pastry
portion. Sounds like a challenge.
Pastry portion of the show. Back in a moment. It's Jeff Cock and Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Survivor 48 is here. And after every episode, dig deep into the show with On Fire, the official Survivor podcast. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show, joined now by Jason Smith. The Jason John every single day from 11 till 2. So, Jason, you're going to be on at – you're going to be doing live radio when Memphis is playing Wichita State. How are you going to handle this?
John's going to handle the play-by-play, and I'm going to handle the analysis. Now, he said nobody's going to be listening. He said yesterday no one's going to be listening to us. So that's not going to matter. They're going to all be watching on their televisions. I've asked our listeners, sure, turn it on.
Uh-huh.
Turn down the broadcast.
Uh-huh.
And turn up Jason and John on the play-by-play analysis. I promise you,
uh-huh,
I'll be better, and I love them to death. We've had them on the show. But I'll be better than Ron Slay. I'll be good. And John's going to be better than he was next to Hasseltine when he was doing the high school all-star game.
I forgot
that. In his little tight shirt, showing off his tattoos. That. So we're gonna shine some things up. We're going to give you a real professional effort today, you know, on these Tigers.
So from 11 till 12, you're going to do your the conventional show. You're not turning it into a pregame show.
But just regular Jason and John fun that first hour.
The first class entertainment and insight that we've come to expect. Are you really at noon going to turn on the game and talk about the game as it unfolds for the next?
No, because it's, I mean, I don't know if you heard, but John gave us a little taste earlier this week, and he's saying, Jason, do you see Billy Richmond on the floor? And I'm like, John, that's not going to work. We sound terrible. And so I can't just open it up and let him do this. He tightened it up a little bit. He gave us a little bit of an example of what it could be yesterday, because we've had SEC tournament on last 2 days. And we're not gonna attempt to give you a play by play, but we're certainly gonna keep you updated in the best way that J&J know how.
Well, I'd expect nothing
organically.
Less.
Yeah, organically.
Have you ever done color commentary or play by play before?
No, and it really does. I mean, it says a lot about my career, right? That I've never been asked to do that. Never in my life have I been approached about being. And we've had we got Hustle in town. I was formerly a season ticket holder down there. They wanted my money, but they certainly didn't want me on analysis.
You tried out for that team, though. You can't be a player analyst.
Well, I tried out and then bought season tickets. I mean, come on. I've been on both sides of it, baby. And I was really trying to be a part of that thing down there.
The only
I dumped my season tickets after one season.
The only time I did play-by-play.
Best decision I ever made in my life.
I did play-by-play, of course. Memorable play-by-play from the Bahamas.
When the Tigers
were playing in a room, a ballroom.
You had a great, because you were all we had, right?
Down there.
There was nothing. Right, yeah.
There was nothing. Or some people were like streaming it on their phones, for people. And so I was on with GP. I didn't do much play by play. I did a little. It was my, it was my one experience. And I'll tell you this, it's difficult. It's not actually...
Exactly, that's what you find out.
And what you find out is it's impossible. So it's
completely different job. You can say you work in radio, but, radio play-by-play, TV 100%. Play-by-play, completely different job than what we do daily.
Makes you appreciate Pete
100%.
And Eric.
Absolutely.
And the rest. Okay, so what's your level of nervousness about this game on behalf of the Memphis Tigers?
I got zero nervousness. I'm like Jeffrey. I feel good that it's Wichita State. I just think any chance that there'd be sort of an underestimating of your opponent, maybe with South Florida because you handled them twice. You can't do that with Wichita State because they beat you. And frankly, they were good enough on the boards beating you in both games, if I remember correctly, particularly on the offensive glass in that second game. They were good enough on the boards that you remember those matchups and you got your antenna going up into this one. The other thing about it, and I know we can talk about sort of incentive and, it's a quad three, and you just got to, you got Joe Lunardi saying, and I thought it was very key yesterday, Munns goes and the beat writer over at the Commercial Appeal for the Tigers goes over and asks Lunardi, what are they going to be? And Lunardi points out, I'm paraphrasing, I don't have it in front of me, but essentially that he will move them up from 8-7 so long as they make Sunday. So if you want to spin it that way, right, if you want to tell your team, well, look, here's what they think about us. And Lunardi, John broke it down to me this week. We actually went through some of the grading on these guys. He's been more accurate with seeding than Jerry Palm recently. So if you want to put some stock in that eight, you go right ahead. But if you're Penny, you could play that sort of, hey, we got work to do right here. We got to win to move up. If you believe that, what I believe is that there are seven. Because how, if you were Joe Lunardi, can you justify what he told Munns is, I will move them up to seven, quite possibly they make Sunday. They didn't talk about winning the title game. That's where they should be. Because how could quad three wins now matter, right? And then now what today is, you're going to bump them up a seed line because they've gotten, picked up two more quad three wins or whatever Tulane or FAU is going to be tomorrow in addition to today? No, this is why, I think they're, I feel great about a seven. Maybe there's still this outshot of a six if you add a conference title to it. We know that seeding is typically set on Sundays already. But I just have a good deal of confidence that you're not in 8-9 like everybody thinks, as evidenced by Joe Lunardi saying he'll move you up for a couple of quad three wins. That's not even winning the AAC tournament. And I think because it's Wichita State, you go in there focused. And, this is the team, the two, embarrassed you last season at this point, even though, let's be real, the season was already an embarrassment.
Isn't I guess the way I might look at it is, and Joe Lunardi does this much, you know, he does it full time practically. I don't.
Absolutely.
Isn't it that if you lose today, it might drop you into the 8-9 game? It's not so much for, at least for me.
That's what I believe.
It's not
correct.
For me.
That's what I'm saying.
But either way, the result is the same, is that you have to win today to not be in the 8-9 game. And if you lose today, maybe you're a 7 now. Whether you look at it as a couple of wins will elevate you to 7 or a loss will drop you to 8-9, the bottom line is you can't lose or you're going to end up in the 8-9.
I mean, that's the way I would play it. I mean, if you're looking for what you need to tell your team or what incentive is, that's fine. But the bottom line is go out and win the damn thing, because you're the best team in this tournament, this conference tournament. Obviously, you proved that during the season. And again, a loss anywhere will do damage to you. I mean, we can, you know, sit up here and debate what Lunardi's got, what Palm's got, but it's going to damage you. So it's really the same mode, except that now, frankly, you can complete what's been, you know, my partners called it, I think they're calling it, you know, the sweep. And yeah, sure, you want a trophy and everything else, and, you know, to some, well, that you were supposed to do that. But no, it would signify the end of what was, you know, a statement that said, not just are we're back, but we're here doing what we're supposed to, which is dominating this league. We're maximizing. Right. It's what Ed Scott says that Memphis has to do right now. You know, without a home, another home to go to. You got to be the best you can be in your conference and go win this conference tournament. We'll see where you're at. But I feel good. If you do that, you're not an 8-9.
Yeah. If you think you're too good for the conference, go out and prove you're too good for the conference. I don't think it'll be interesting, because if they do get to the championship game on Sunday, and if they then win the championship game on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so I was there 2 years ago for the celebration when they won their first conference tournament championship under Penny, and I was there Friday night when they won their first regular season conference title under Penny. And both times, they were really emotional celebrations, right?
Yep.
Once was Kendrick Davis, and it was Penny, and it was really super emotional 2 years ago. And then it was also emotional Friday. I think if they win Sunday, there will be much more, sure, they'll pose, they'll cut down the nets again, whatever. There will be much more business-like, we did what we were supposed to do, now bring it on, rather than necessarily the celebrations that we've seen recently. Do you
probably
sign that?
I mean, probably. I don't know. I'm going to be careful with that, because I just remember the conversation we had about what Friday in that South Florida game would represent. A lot of folks, my partner, we had this discussion, thought, well, they've already celebrated. They've already won.
He was wrong.
Clearly, as you said, and you saw the emotion in Penny, no, it meant something different. The confetti coming down meant something different. And so I'm not going to sit up here and tell you that it won't be just as grand a celebration on Sunday if they do it. But I'm with you. Ultimately, the more of these you win, Jeff. I mean, that first conference tournament title against Houston, it's his first one. And it's huge for the program at that point, and especially with who you did it over. Yesterday, I mean, in the regular season, that was the first one. And in a year where, let's be real, you go into it pressure-packed. And so to get that relief and that, you know, to make it official clearly meant something. I think it's probably the same thing for them here. But you're right. The more of these you win, the more times you show this conference you're the best and we will go out and do it. Yeah, the more business-like it's going to become. So ultimately, I agree with your, you know, what you're saying fundamentally. But I do think, I mean, they're going to celebrate. I mean, and they should.
And they should.
And they should.
100%. If they pull it off. Well, Jason, from 11 to 2, I'll be watching sometimes, but I have errands to run, and I think you should know people will be listening to you. You are must-listen radio, and people, and they're going to be going about their day, and as they're going about their day, they got to be listening to see what the hell is happening, and so I think it's a heavy responsibility. And I appreciate that.
I promise you, John and I will give you our best. I will make sure that John does that we do not make a mockery of this thing.
All right. Thank you.
Yep.
Appreciate it.
All right, brother. Yep.
Jason Smith. Jason, John. Every single day from 11 to 2. Meanwhile, I was looking here. I was looking on ESPN, and they're debating. Everything's a debate. You know, like, maybe our show would be better if we framed everything as absolutes and takes and stuff. But should Cooper Flagg play another minute at Duke?
So all they're doing is they're just recycling the Zion. When Zion got hurt, remember Zion got banged up at the end of the year. Should they shut him down? Zion's like, no, I want to keep playing.
Should Cooper Flagg play another minute at Duke, Jeffrey? We've seen what can happen.
Well, I mean, A, how hurt is he?
Yeah, the answer is that if he is ready to, if he is, and I presume this is true. I mean, the guy, I don't think for a moment, as he's talked about coming back to Duke for another year, that he was going to come back to Duke for another year. I don't think anyone's taken that seriously. But he clearly likes playing basketball. He likes playing college basketball. And so if he is healthy, I suspect, yes, there is a risk of injury. If you play basketball games, there is a risk of injury. There was yesterday and the day before and the day before and the day before and the day before, every single day this year. I guess he, you know what? He could have set the whole season out and he still probably would have been the number one pick. It was a little less self-evident. There was, at the beginning of the season, until he had the year that he had, there was sort of a debate. Would he be one? People thought he probably would be one, and now it's become emphatic. But of course he's going to play if he can play.
I think he's definitely helped himself by playing basketball this year.
100%.
And my whole deal is, like, I'm just so sick of everything being about what you are as a prospect. Like, it's just insane to me. And I feel like this conversation was a little bit more disingenuous when they, quote unquote, weren't getting paid. You know what we mean? But now that it's like that, everyone is saying, like, there's an acknowledgement they're getting paid. It's not as, well, he shouldn't play. He's not getting a dime.
Yeah, he's getting millions of dollars to play.
Correct.
Even now.
Zion was getting paid to play,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, you're exactly right. That does frame it a little differently. You can't really sit out when you're healthy and you're getting paid. All right. We got Chris Harrington coming up next. Massive weekend for the Grizzlies. They got the Cavs tonight. And then the Heat are in town for the Tony Allen retirement ceremony tomorrow night. So we'll talk to Chris about that. Before then, I will tell you, if you want something framed, the Frame Corner is the place to go and has been for 50 years, right here over on Park Avenue, 5035 Park Avenue. I was kind of astounded when I heard that. 50 years of taking things and making them into memories, making them into lasting pieces that you will display and hand down and have forever. So whatever it is that you want framed, whether it's a wedding photos, I'm going to a wedding this weekend, or whether it's sports memorabilia or whatever else it is, if you want it done beautifully, absolutely beautifully, by experts who know what frame will best set it off, know how to display it, know what matting will best set it off, make it look beautiful, head on into the Frame Corner and see the folks who've been doing it for 50 years. FrameCornerMemphis.com, 5035 Park Avenue. Chris Harrington, when we return, 92.9 FM ESPN.